And we know it was a lie. It was a lie because we know who Satan was. He's a liar. Go back to this in John chapter 8. He's a liar and the father of liars. This is the devil we're talking about. He lied to Eve then. He'll lie to us now. Deceive us. Deception was really, God may have told you not to eat of it, but really God knows that the day you eat of it, your eyes will be open, you'll know good and evil. So that's why God doesn't want you to eat of it. It's implication that Satan's given. So, Satan lies, he reasons, he justifies, he persuades, he tries to pull us into his trap there. He did Eve in this case here. So then Eve sins. Woman saw that the tree was good for food, pleasant to the eye, and desirable to make one wise. She took the fruit and she ate it. And we talked about this song. Now I went back and circled this because I didn't talk about it maybe quite enough. When she took that fruit, God has said this and Satan said this. What does she believe? She totally believed what Satan said rather than what God said. About faith, probably today. Her faith was in Satan. She had more trust, more belief, more confidence in the words that Satan spoke to her than the words God spoke to her. So then she also gave to Adam, and he ate, and we talked about sin, love, company. I added this verse here in from Proverbs chapter 1. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they come, say, come with us. Get them people in, we're going to do evil. Come, go with us here. And that's the way sin is. People who love sin generally won't come in. They'll suck others in with them. So innocence is now lost. Their eyes were open. They realized they were naked. They disobeyed God. That can now tell the difference between good and evil. So they ate that priest that they're not supposed to. And shame comes in. Now they're unrealized they have sin and their innocence is lost because of it. So God says, who told you you were naked? How did you know this? I said, he didn't know already. Have you eaten that tree I told you not to? And of course they had and he knew that. And we look at this verse here in Hebrews 4 that says, there's nothing hidden in his sight. God knows everything. He knows what's going on in their life, in my life, in your life. So now they start shifting blame. The man says, the woman you gave to me, she gave to me and I ate of that tree. They blamed God, she blamed his wife. And then it comes down to who ate the fruit out of it. And I did. So then Eve looks at it and says, what have you done now? And she said, the serpent deceived me. She puts the blame on him, but she comes back and says, I ate. So the consequences for this, For Satan, it's the fact that God is going to send his seed that will crush Satan's head. He will defeat Satan, the victory over Satan, which is the beginning now, this theme of redemption that's going to come through all the thread of the Bible. We'll go through this the next several years. The woman, I'll multiply your sorrow and conception. Desire to be for your husband, he's rule over you. And then for Adam, the toil of the ground, sweat, you'll bring forth your food, and you'll return to the dust of which you came. And then, so they don't eat the tree of life, they're banished from the garden and kicked out of that. So that brings us to chapter 4. Ready for this morning. Alright, so I read chapter 4, and Eve has a son. First son was born with Cain, and she's, the name of this is, I have been given a man from the Son, from the Lord, and that is by the help of the Lord, and she's expressing gratitude because of it. So, Cain is born, and the meaning of the name Cain is this gratitude she has for getting a son from the Lord. So she calls him that, here it is, I got ahead of myself, possession is valued above everything else. That's the name Cain, the value she puts on this first one son she has. So she gets the very next verse, she has another son, Abel, and by his name means vanity or weakness, maybe grief and lamentation, perhaps it brings back the sorrow in childbirth, childbearing, she's cursed with there. If you look at that. And there's, I don't think this is true, but there's at least one commentary I read that says maybe Cain and Abel were twins. I see no proof of that, but at least that speculation was popped out there at one time. It's that possibility. So now we get a little time passes. I think it's verse 3 or so over there. It says, in the course of time, as time passed by, these babies born to her grew up, and now they're men, and they bring offerings to the Lord. And Cain brings the offering of the fruit of the ground. He was a tiller of the soil. So he brings forth part of his produce there. Excuse me, as an offering. Abel also brought an offering, but being a tender of sheep, flocks, he brought forth part of his flock and their fat to the Lord. And so now they both offer these sacrifices. And the big thing comes up, we find out that the Lord respected Abel's sacrifice, but he didn't respect Cain's sacrifice. So there's a difference between the two. And that difference is what we've got to talk about here for a minute. Why did the Lord respect one and not the other? So, let's just put that out, start with here. Why did the Lord respect Cain, Abel's sacrifice, but not Cain's? Doesn't say that, doesn't say God said do this, and Abel did that, and Cain said don't do this, and that's what he did anyhow. But there's some assumptions there, and we'll get into other verses and look into that. So when Cain was not accepted, it's because the verse says his countenance fell. He got sad. He got angry, as a matter of fact, over it, because his sacrifice had been rejected. So, kind of like us. If we do something, we think we're doing something good, as in Cain would have if he brought this sacrifice to the Lord, and we get put down with it, and you turn in a report to the boss, or it's something, whatever it may be, that you thought was really something good, and it gets totally rejected and put aside, and whatever, and you get upset. You're disappointed, and you get angry about it. That's what happened to Cain here. His countenance fell, and he was rejected. So, getting back to the why, Mike, a little bit here, we jump over to Hebrews chapter 11, this chapter on faith, and we'll hit it a couple of times this morning. We found out that Abel offered his sacrifice by faith. Now, what does that tell us, Jeff? If he offered it by faith. Okay. That's what Mike said. So, faith comes by hearing the Word of God. Faith is a belief. Go back to Eve believing Satan. Well, then she believed God. She had more faith in Satan than she did in God. Earlier we talked about. So, Abel offered his sacrifice by faith. He did it believing what he had been told by God. The part that Mike and Jeff were those two that was not written to us, and we know that there. But he offered his sacrifice by faith. And it was a more excellent sacrifice, the words there used, than what Cain did. And so, because of that, he was determined to be a righteous man. He was doing what's right. Now, so Abel, whose sacrifice was acceptable, because offered the right spirit, that is the right obedience, comes into it here. So he obeyed by faith in that. And I don't know where Cain got his ideas for his sacrifice. Obviously, from what we read here, it didn't come from the fact that God had told him to do that. So we conclude it came from his own ideas. So here's the best way to do this. I am a tiller of the soil, therefore I will bring my goods to that. So don't know where Cain got his idea of that. It was not from obedience, not from what God had told him, obviously, from this standpoint. And here's the point for us then. The last part of verse 4 of Hebrews 11. Abel is telling us something. So what is Abel telling us when it says, though he being dead still speaks to us? Ready? Right. It's a very great lesson for us on obedience. Okay? Look at the words up there. By faith, Abel offered God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. He obtained righteousness because of it. God testified of his gifts. And in doing this faith he had when he worshiped God, when he offered God an acceptable sacrifice, he speaks to us. He's telling us something today because of that. So, faith that speaks to all the ages, and Hebrews 6, a couple of verses later here, without faith, without this obedience, this belief, leading to obedience, it's impossible to please God. So, question comes up for Cain then. God's going to ask him a question. An important question. Verse 7. Let's look at the first question part before we read the rest of the verse. If you do well, will you not be accepted? What's the obvious answer? Yes. Okay. Cain, if you do well, will you not be accepted? Has Abel done well? Yes. Was Abel accepted? Yes. Has Cain done well to this point? No. But God's saying, Cain, if you do well, what? You'll be accepted. And it's a rhetorical, that's the right word, rhetorical question. The obvious answer is yes. If you do well, will you not be accepted? Well, sure you will. If you do what I say, will you be accepted? If you believe this, will you be accepted? Now, the next part then gets into the other side of it, the negative side. But if you do not do well, what? If you do well, you'll be accepted by God. If you don't do well, sin's coming. Blind the door. It wants you. Go back to chapter 3. Satan lies, deceives, entices. Are some of the words we use back over there. It's craftiness. Sin wants you, Cain. It's lying there waiting for you. But what? This is the kicker of the verse. Sin wants you, but whose choice is it, Cain? It's your choice. You should rule over it. You have a choice, Cain. Romans 12:21, don't be overcome with evil, overcome evil with good. That's written to us. So, do we have a choice about this? When sin comes to our door and knocks, do we have a choice on how we deal with it? And a follow-up on the same thing then from 1 John chapter 2, verse 14. I've written to you, young men, because you are strong, and the word of God abides in you, that you have overcome the evil one, the wicked one. The big lesson for us out of this is what? Does sin want us? Does Satan want us? Does Satan pull us? Does Satan entice us? Does Satan lie to get us? Does Satan deceive to get us? Does Satan throw choices out there that we have to make between choose between this and this? And what he does, what's it going to be? If you do well, you'll be accepted. If you don't do well, sin's waiting there. It wants you, but what? And that's the but. But you can't overcome. I can't overcome. I don't care whether it's temptation to lie, to steal, to lust, to cheat, to be angry, whatever it is. It's all sitting there waiting on us every day. No, we can overcome. Yeah, we can handle whatever's there. But it takes that strength, that faith to do it. Wes got a comment on this part here. All right, still the same verse here. It's Cain's choice, do well or not. The wrong choice would be sin. Sin's already been introduced. It's waiting on Cain. But he is capable of ruling over sin. He's brought the wrong sacrifice. God's not pleased with it. God's told him, Cain, you can do better. But now what does Cain do next? Oh, lesson for us. So what's Cain's choice? What does he do? There are a couple more verses here. I'm sorry before I get to that. I've got my slides up here. This verse in Romans 6, and another in Romans 6 here, that we are to walk in a newness of life. We become Christians. We're putting away that old man of sin. We're walking in a new life. Old man was crucified with him. Body of sin done away with. No longer be slaves of sin. And be angry. Do not sin. Do not give place to the devil. All right. Now, King's choice. So, unacceptable sacrifice. God appears to him. Can you have the choice? Are you going to handle it? And what does Cain do? Goes out in the field with his brother, walking along with him, and kills him. That's what Cain kills later. And have a choice? Who won? Satan won. Okay. Who lost? Cain lost first. But in losing, he turns down God. So, goes out there with him. Maybe he is just walking on the friendly chat. We don't know how it started out. But he found a convenient time and a place and committed murder. Look at these two verses here. 1 John 3:12. Cain was the wicked one. He murdered his brother. New Testament, referring back. Well, those reasons we need to know the Old Testament, see what's in the New Testament, referring back to it. Why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's righteous. Jealousy? Seems pretty obvious. So, conclusion. Cain worshiped God in an unacceptable way. What can I conclude with that? He said it was his works were evil. Did I conclude that when I worship God in a way he has not prescribed, it's evil? It's sin? It's unacceptable to him? Sure I can. So, Cain kills Abel. He killed him envy. Hatred, hating his own righteousness. You ever been, have somebody do something good and it's upset at you because they got all the glory and praise and whatever out of it? That's kind of human nature. We ought to be glad with somebody when they get something good, but we don't. We see the jealousy part kick in sometimes. And that's what it was with Cain here. But, yeah, I see him builds up. God comes out, says, Cain, where's your brother? Cain, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? So now, what's Cain done? He offered all sacrifice, right? He got angry because of it. Jealousy kicked in, jealous over the sacrifice. That's the acceptability of Abel's sacrifice versus his. Hatred for his brother. Murder. And now what's he going to do about it? He lies about it. It just builds up and 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 builds up. More and more. So, God's going to punish Cain because of this. So, what does he do? What's God do to Cain? Banish them, and brother cries, blood cries out from the ground. God knew what Cain had done. You're cursed in the earth. It's almost a wonder to us that God didn't kill Cain. Later on, there are many times when similar type sins have occurred and God just killed a person. He didn't with Cain. When you till the ground, we're going to yield for you. Cain, well, they till the ground. So it's like his occupation has been hit here. They're going to yield for you out there. and a fugitive and a vagabond you shall be across the earth. You're just going to be a wanderer out there by yourself. Yeah. Now, at this point in time, what would you want out of Cain at this time? Some type of contrition, some type of, I've got to change. Does Cain ever show that? Is my punishment greater than I can bear? Misery? Penitence? Nope. No cry for pardon. It just says it's more than I can take. Never do we see any kind of anything from Cain that says, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Over any of this. We've got to finish up chapter 4. I got some thoughts that we missed on chapter 4. You want to put out here? Yeah. To the soul, right? Just ask David.
We need to drill that into our own men, but also to our children. And then decide it today, not today. We may not see the consequences of sin 20, 30, 40 years old, but sin can have lifelong consequences. Your job is open. You've got this one system to make that one. That's not bad enough.
It is. Sin's introduced back in chapter 3. And the rest of the narrative, we'll see sin just constantly rearing his head. And we get into the children of Israel, and they're doubting God many times, and the idolatry and things they get into. And every time, to the point Jeff made, there's consequences. They wind up in captivity because of it. And they come back, and they still can't worship God, and they wind up getting cut off. And even in the New Testament, there are people who commit various sins that cause them consequences. And David's a big example of that. The consequences that haunted him the rest of his life because of this incident with Bathsheba. But it does have major consequences. Not being cut off, Jeff Alpus has him play with them or not. But I read one commentary on it that said, in bringing their sacrifices, think about the patriarchal age and the father Ru there and Adam being the one that would be over the whole family realm there. If they would have brought their sacrifices to Adam, and he would be the one that would be sharing in their sacrifices to God because of the patriarchal organization type of the family. True or false, I don't know. But if he did that, sure enough, he was separated from the one who was offered sacrifices for him to God. So, be that to me. Better cross that one place there. Bad, bad, bad chapter. Three is bad enough. Four just adds to it. Let me look at it. Let's talk about somebody's good for a few minutes. We've got just a few minutes left here. Enoch. Get on over into chapter 5. And chapter 5 is just a list of all the generations that come in here between Adam and Noah. As you go down through the family line, the history here, and there's different things said by different ones. Mainly it's how long each one lived, who their son was, and the primary son, and then how long they lived after that. And they built history up through that. So Enoch lived 65 years and got Methuselah. And if you look at the name Methuselah, it seems to be a prophetical statement that Methuselah died in the flood, or at the time of the flood, whether that's in the flood or the year of the flood. But the prophecy there, the name of it is such that it leads to that. And if you count up the time, and I've done this, list all these people and their ages and when they begot their next son and list it down through there, you're going to run down to Methuselah running out at the same age the time the flood came. So just a little sideline note there about that. Let's go back to Enoch. Enoch had Methuselah, but then Enoch had other sons and daughters. Now he's 65 when he had Methuselah. He's now 365 years old, which is quite a young man for these people in this age. Methuselah, remember, was 969 years, the oldest recorded age we have in the Bible. And it said he walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. This phrase, walk with God, from that context of this Eastern culture there, denotes a constant and familiar association. Now think about that a little bit. Enoch walked with God, and God took him. What kind of relationship did Enoch have with God? The definition we get of the culture here, he had a constant and familiar association with God. Would you like to be walking with God today? Can we apply this thing? Definition, if you will, to us? Do we have a constant and familiar association with God? We walk with God in our daily life. Not that God's going to take us up into heaven like he did Cain. I mean, did Enoch up here? But think about that association. One that's that close. Walk with God. Constant and familiar association with God. We'll go back to Hebrews 11, the very next verse after Abel says, Enoch was taken away, so he did not see death, he was not found because God took him. You think about who's the other person we know of in the Bible who was taken in a similar type fashion and did not die? Elijah. And it's interesting that after he was taken up, the sons of the prophets went all around looking for him, trying to find him. They couldn't find him. Same expression she used here about Enoch. He was not found. They couldn't find him. He was here one day and gone. God had taken him. Before he took him, he had this great testimony for us. And he pleased God. How would you like to see three words written on your tombstone? Please God. Just that much. Just three words. know that it was true. Please stop. Because what else you want to put on there? Doesn't matter. You just, those three words on the tombstone. Okay. Faith, based on Hebrews 5:11-5, is the ground for pleasing God. And this word translated, one word translated was a sudden removal from mortal immortality with no change, no death occurred. And this same concept is talked about in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 51 and 52, about those who are alive when Christ comes in and are moved and put on a new body and things like this. So, the testimony from Cain and Amenoch is, and they translate this word walk with God over there, please God. Same translation we have in Hebrews 11:5. Walk with God, please God. When they translated from the Old Testament to the Septuagint, the Greek version of it, that's the term they brought across over there. And we've got one more character to introduce here in chapter 5, and that's Noah. Don't know much about him from this chapter. We'll get into him next lesson. Read 6, 7, 8, and 9, 4 chapters for Wednesday night. 6, 7, 8, and 9. Noah was 500 years old. How about that? 500 years old. When he had these three sons that we talked about. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So, a number of lessons we talked about this morning. A couple of them. Acceptable worship. Abel's was. Cain's wasn't. One's by faith. One was what God wanted. The other one wasn't. Think about that with us. Even as we worship this morning. Is our worship acceptable to God? And we talked about conquering sin, our choice. We have a choice. Cain had a choice. We have a choice. What are we going to do? And then we talked about faith. Please God. Seek God's word. Faith comes by hearing, hearing the word of God. Jeff brought up 17. So how do we please God? We've got to know what we want. All right, about 2 minutes left. I got some comments or some ad here that I miswhacked on as we straightened out or whatever. Yeah. Oh yeah. Adam and Eve in the garden. They constantly had God in the presence there. But they gave it up. Chapter 3, and Cain and Abel. Brought, learned them in chapter 4. There's a couple of good examples brought up here in chapter 5 among the generations. And now chapter 6, 7, 8, and 9 gets into, that's the end, by the way, of the first period of 17 periods before the flood. Chapter 6 gets into the beginning of the flood. The flood actually starts in chapter 7. There's the preparation in this. And just read the first few verses. But keep these things in mind about the sin of Adam and Eve, the sin of Cain here. And you read the first part of chapter 6 and the wickedness that the whole world turned into. And what God does about it. Okay, 6, 7, 8, and 9 for Wednesday night. Thank you.